Proverbs 22:4. By humility and the fear of the Lord are riches and honor and life. Dear Lord, I pray that you would be with me today. Be with my mind. Be with my mouth. I pray that you would be with your people. Help them to listen to the words that you have for them. Thank you for bringing us here. We thank you for this communion together. We pray these things in your name. Amen. I don't actually know how to do this. All right. So the topic of money and wealth, rich and poor, the wise and foolish, are subjects that have always received a certain level of attention. There are some biblical concepts that you might not think the Bible even addresses, and they might seem too esoteric to even consider for yourself. But money is something that every single one of us must deal with. It's so common and necessary to our lives that we may be tempted to not even think about what God thinks about it. We just use it in our normal day-to-day life, and we cover our bills. We do the things that we have to do without even so much as a concern to what God wants us to do with it. The Bible does cover grand philosophical and metaphysical ideas, but it also has much to say about the sort of things that we deal with in everyday life. Today, I'm going to talk about money. And to help you give the proper thought to our subject, since we sometimes pass it over, I want you to help me here in the introduction. I want you to consider three different situations that I'm going to give you. They're very different situations, but they're probably situations that are represented by the people in this room. As I describe them to you, I want you to consider for yourself which one you think is living in wisdom and righteousness before God. The first couple we will consider is wealthy by anyone's assessment. They live in a nicer neighborhood than maybe you do. The husband can be found on his boat most of the days of the week. The wife is successful in her business, and she's advanced farther than many of the women in her field because she's skilled at her job, and she's not yet had any children, so she's able to focus on her job. The dual income and few responsibilities means that they are able to live anywhere that they choose and are able to leave for exotic locales far more often than the average couple that is their age. This first couple is wealthy by any standard that you could assess it by. And most around them cannot live in the same way that they do. So that's our first couple. Our second family is near the other end of the spectrum. The husband works at an honest job, makes an honest wage, but they will never be able to live anywhere but in the cheapest housing that they can find. The wife has been given many children, far more than their neighbors and coworkers may think is appropriate. And because of the many children, she is a stay-at-home mother that finds her pride and joy in being at home with her children. The family is too big for expensive vacations, and the food budget is probably not as big as it really should be. The children, if they want to go to college, will have to work their way through it because there's no way that the parents can afford to do so. And they will never be able to afford to live the same way that most people around them do. Our second family just doesn't have the means to live any way else. Lastly, the third family that I want you to consider as we begin is right in the middle of these first two situations. The husband works a good job, but you'd never really think that they were wealthy. The wife has borne the amount of children that she and her husband wanted from the beginning. And even though it was an expensive thing, the children's braces were paid for eventually, and they have never lived off of government aid. The clothes are not too old, even if some of them are bought secondhand. And the two cars that the family owns, one of them is paid for, and the other is paid for mostly on time. Nobody's too angry at them. Our third family is average in many ways. And they are not lacking in any of the normal things that people consider to be requirements in a modern life, even if some things have to wait until they can be paid for another month. These are the three options that I want you to consider today as we begin. The first is well off. The second is poorer than most around them. And the third is average by most people's assessment. The question I have for you today is this. Given the information I've given you, which of these families would you say is living wisely and righteously? Have you picked the situation that is closest to where you are? And have I even given you enough information to make this assessment? I want you to keep this in mind as we continue with a sermon on money and wealth. We're going to look at the book of Proverbs for our answers because Proverbs has many answers to give on this subject about how to live wisely and righteously with the things that God has given us. The book of Proverbs is a collection of wise sayings, mostly by King Solomon, but there are others that are included in the book, others from around the same time period. When you think of the book of Proverbs, you probably think of many separate, unrelated verses that are easily pasted on calendars and maybe wielded against children by overbearing mothers. That happens. But the book of Proverbs has a lengthy introduction that tells us what the goal of the book is, and it's tied together in more ways than one. In this introduction, we see that wisdom is represented. We're given a picture of what wisdom looks like. Wisdom is represented by a wise, gracious woman, while foolishness and folly, the opposite of wisdom, are represented by a loud, devious, and unfaithful fool of a woman. The point of these contrasts is to push us to seek after the wisdom that is contained in the rest of the book. The goal of Proverbs is to impress us with the importance of gaining wisdom. We find in Proverbs chapter 3, verse 13, "Happy is the man that findeth wisdom, and the man that getteth understanding. For the merchandise of it is better than the merchandise of silver, and the gain thereof than fine gold. She is more precious than rubies, and all the things thou canst desire are not to be compared unto her." The point here is pretty obvious. Wisdom brings things that are far better than gold and not even worth being compared with silver. There's nothing more valuable to seek after than wisdom and to gather wisdom by the bucketful. This is the main point of Proverbs, and I'm not going to attempt to say anything against it. But I want you to pay attention to what the very next verse says. Proverbs 13, verse 16. "Length of days is in her right hand, and in her left hand, riches and honor." We see here that when you learn from wisdom, Lady Wisdom brings certain things along with her. And one of those things is said to be riches. It doesn't say that wisdom brings enough for each day. It doesn't say that the wise will always be snatched from the poorhouse at the last minute by a check in the mail that you weren't expecting. Verse 16 says that our respectable lady, Wisdom, comes bearing riches in her hand. When wisdom comes knocking at your door, riches follow after her like an obedient hound. Now, this might strike you as weird if you think about it. You might just read past it normally when you're going through Proverbs. And now that I'm pointing out, maybe you're thinking that I'm making a little bit too much of it out of this one piece of a verse. But the discussion of riches and wealth does not end here in Proverbs. Proverbs chapter 3, verse 9 says, "Honor the Lord with thy substance and with the first fruits of all thine increase. So shall thy barns be filled with plenty, and thy presses shall burst out with new wine." In Proverbs 8:18, Lady Wisdom says, "Riches and honor are with me, yea, durable riches and righteousness. My fruit is better than gold, yea, than fine gold, and my revenue than choice silver. I lead in the way of righteousness, in the midst of the paths of judgment." And verse 21, "that I may cause those that love me to inherit substance, and I will fill their treasuries." And in Proverbs 8, verse 34, Lady Wisdom says, "Blessed is the man that heareth me, watching daily at my gates, waiting at the posts of my doors. For whoso findeth me, findeth life, and shall obtain favor of the Lord." We see in the introduction of the book of Proverbs that wisdom is tied to wealth and is even viewed as the natural result of wise living. Lady Wisdom tells us that one of the main benefits of listening to her is that she brings wealth and riches with her. Financial blessing is the expected result of living wisely in the world that God has created. This is a point that we may have problems understanding, and there's certainly plenty of reasons why all around us. Some take the passages that I've shown you, and they try to make financial prosperity into some sort of goal of the Christian life. They even chide those that have financial problems by saying that they just need to have more faith, and God will reward them. This heretical, and it has to be said that way, this heretical fascination with money has turned many Christians away from even the idea that riches can be a good thing. And attacking us from the other side, that's on a so-called Christian side, attacking us from the other side, our culture tells us that we should try to get and gather as much wealth as we can, while simultaneously teaching us that anyone that has more than we do is highly suspect and probably took advantage of someone else in order to get the money that they have generated. As a result, we tend to be suspicious of anyone that has more money than we have determined is the proper amount, or even the godly amount. It gets so bad that I have noticed multiple times that whenever another church member has a new car, or a better house, or anything that is better than they had, it's obvious they're moving up in the world, they feel compelled to tell me how much of a steal they got on it, or that it's a tax write-off, or maybe that their business bought it for them, or anything else that they can do to make sure I understand they did not pay a fair market value for the item that they got, for the blessing that God gave them. And these are just the more innocuous examples that I can think of. You've probably experienced at some time or another the greed and envy that people, even in this church, might express when they see someone else with something that they think they could never afford. The accusations and the gossip start flying whenever someone sees another Christian with a car that they wouldn't buy or living in a neighborhood that they couldn't consider. This is wrong. It's wrong not only because of the envious attitude that is so obviously expressed, but because it potentially judges another Christian for a blessing that God himself has told us is an expected result of living according to the rules of the world that he has made. God made the world with wisdom. The book of Proverbs pictures Lady Wisdom sitting alongside God as he created the world. It says, "By me the worlds were created." This world and everything in it was made to function in a certain way. If we live according to the rules that God has set up, he created the world. If we live according to his rules, we will find that he is the creator and things go the way that he created them to. When you are following the rules of the world that you have been placed into, you will find that the rewards are life and honor and blessings, like the verse that I read at the beginning of the sermon. Now, maybe you still don't believe me. Or maybe you think I'm just taking isolated verses in Proverbs. Let me give you a few more. Proverbs 10, verse 4. "He becometh poor that dealeth with a slack hand, but the hand of the diligent maketh rich." And only a few verses later, Proverbs 10, 15. "The rich man's wealth is his strong city. The destruction of the poor is their poverty." Same chapter, Proverbs 10, 22. "The blessing of the Lord, it maketh rich, and he addeth no sorrow with it." Proverbs 12, verse 12. "The wicked desireth the net of evil men," or the gain of evil men. But the root of the righteous yieldeth fruit. I've given you these verses in the order that they appear in the book of Proverbs, and we've only gotten to chapter 12. If I were to list every proverb that speaks well of riches and money, we would be here for a very long time. The point that I want to share with you is that the most iconic book of wisdom in the Bible says that if you actually listen and obey what it says, you should expect that God's blessings will come with it. Wisdom comes from God. And what we are seeing in the wisdom that God gives is that, generally speaking, riches come from wisdom. This order is very important. Wisdom comes first, and then riches come afterwards as a tool to help you show the wisdom that you have learned to the rest of the world that God has created. Anytime that wealth is quickly made before wisdom has grown up to support it is a telltale sign that disaster is coming. When I was an 8-year-old, I came into a wealth of old cedar fence boards. I don't remember how we got them, but I know that they weren't planned for use by my parents. I think we were planning on burning them later in our wood stove, so there was nothing keeping me from doing what I wanted with them, as long as my parents didn't know. And not only did I have this wealth of old cedar planks, I had a hammer, and I had nails, and I had a posse of friends in the neighborhood that were all ready to make a clubhouse with me. And so, in our 8-year-old wisdom, we took our hammers and nails and our fence boards, and we started nailing them together. And while knowledge would teach me that studs are supposed to be 16 inches apart, and that there are rules for how you put a roof on, or that you're actually supposed to have a roof at all, this is something that I had not yet accumulated, and neither had any of the rest of my 8, 9, and 10-year-old friends. So, we had a blast. We spent the entire day building up this structure. It was probably as big as my bedroom. It had walls. We were going to put a roof on top. It was standing. It looked like it was solid. I didn't know any better that it wouldn't stand for much longer. And so, we put it all together. We went to bed with dreams of our clubhouse that the entire neighborhood would come and play in the next day. And then we left the house in the morning, all excited to go to our clubhouse, and found that our superstructure clubhouse was now leaning over at about a 35-degree angle. Because while I said I didn't know that the studs had to be 16 inches apart, that wouldn't matter because we didn't have any studs anyways. And everything was just fastened with maybe a couple nails at one point, so it was able to flop over. It's a fond memory, I hope you can tell. The knowledge of how to build must exist before the tool that we have can be of any help. Any deviation from this order to focus on the tool of riches instead of on the goal of building wisdom is the same as giving a framing hammer to an 8-year-old and then being surprised when the structure that he builds in his infinite wisdom comes crashing down. This is where we talk about the flip side of the issue. Some of you may be thinking that you're all on board with me now. It's certainly not a difficult thing to get people thinking about living life and making some money, retiring rich and happy. That's certainly what the world around us teaches us in every way that it can, in every avenue that it can. But some of you still have some hesitancy in agreeing with me. You know enough about Proverbs to know that not every mention of money is positive. Or maybe you've experienced someone with more money than you, taking advantage of the people around them. Proverbs has plenty to say about this as well. And you'll see as we go that money is never considered to be a bad thing in and of itself, as long as it is the tool that comes after the wisdom to apply that tool. It is always the way that we wisely or foolishly use money that is the important thing when Proverbs talks about wealth. Money is a tool. If it's used to build a wise life, then the tool has done its job. But if money is changed from the tool used to build something and becomes the actual thing that we are focusing on, the thing that we are trying to build, then we should not be surprised when it eventually comes falling down in a smoking pile all around us. So how do we avoid being foolish with the money that God has given us? There are many opinions out there on how to build wealth. There are many viewpoints that you will run into on even what is about to happen to our nation as we go forward. You don't have to look far to find someone that is convinced that we are about to enter into hyperinflation because of the amount of money being printed and given away by our federal government. But you can also find respected economists that think that the economy is about to zoom off into the stratosphere once the pandemic restrictions end and everyone starts spending to the level that they think they should be. There are respectable opinions on either side, with a myriad of options all the way in between. Those aren't the only ones. So how are we to know which one is correct? As Christians, we have a responsibility to look to God and His Word for the answers to these questions. And when we do that, we might be surprised with what God says is the way to live wisely with our money. I will not be sharing get-rich-quick ideas with you today. I'm not even going to start talking about the practical investment ideas of growth stocks versus value stocks, or maybe passive income benefits, or even the miracle of compound interest. There are far more qualified people to have those conversations, and I'd have no authority to do so. What I would like to share with you today, with the rest of our time together, are seven ways that Proverbs applies wisdom to finances. And I would be willing to bet that some of them will surprise you. The first one is, a wise use of wealth includes honoring those that deserve to be honored. Proverbs chapter 3, verse 27. Withhold not good from them to whom it is due, when it is in the power of thine hand to do it. If we are looking to wealth as a goal instead of the tool that we use for God's glory, then we will be tempted to hang on to every spare cent that we can get our hands on. We might look at the financial plans that people have made and the numbers that they've crunched for us, and we are tempted to say, if I could just put another $5.27 a month into that fund, I can retire a millionaire 4 months faster than I already planned to. And if we behave this way, we will be tempted to cut the kids back to a top ramen diet, or we'll be tempted to pay the babysitter less than her work is actually worth, or to hold off on a raise for our employees, even when they helped your company to a record month. If the building of wealth is our goal, we will become stingy misers, working hard to build ourselves up. But if righteousness and wisdom is our goal, we will show God's grace and abundance to those that are around us. When your child shows diligence in their tasks, don't be afraid to show God's bounty to them. That's partly why He gave it to you. And whether their payment is in dollars or chocolate ice cream, you can show the grace that God has bestowed to us. When a pastor in your church serves you well, do not be tempted to begrudge them their salary or even a raise to that salary. When your company does well, reward those that are providing value to you. When you have the opportunity to honor someone else with a lavish event, to respect a 25th anniversary or many years faithfully serving a church or whatever the situation is, don't be afraid to honor them if they have deserved it. Don't let your greed get in the way between obeying what God has said to do and honoring those that are deserving of it. With wisdom, we will learn to recognize those that are deserving, and we will not hold back from showing God's blessing to them. Second, a wise use of wealth means not being unequally yoked with those that are not working towards the same goal that we are. Proverbs chapter 6 and verse 1. My son, If thou be surety for thy friend, if thou hast stricken thy hand with a stranger, thou art snared with the words of thy mouth. Thou art taken with the words of thy mouth. Do this now, my son, and deliver thyself. When thou art come into the hand of thy friend, go, humble thyself, and make sure thy friend. Give not sleep to thine eyes, nor slumber to thine eyelids. Deliver thyself as a roe from the hand of the hunter, and as a bird from the hand of the fowler. Proverbs make a special emphasis on not being the collateral for a fool. This could play out in more ways than one. The most direct way is that we should think twice before entering into a contract with someone that is likely to break it. Very often, if a bank is refusing to give a loan to an individual without someone more reliable being involved, then that bank has a very good reason for thinking that someone else's money might be needed. Our passage here tells us to do whatever we can to get out of this situation. Run, dodge, fly away like a bird from a hunter. Whatever is needed to get out of that kind of unwise responsibility. And this is something that may not even be possible if you have already entered into a contract. But if that is the kind of effort required to get out of an arrangement that you have already made, then we should take extra precaution before entering into one in the first place. That is when wisdom would have its best application. This would also apply to any sort of business venture or investment opportunity. Not everyone that comes to you with a grand business idea will be the kind of relationship that you can actually wisely enter into. We have to try not to be cynical, because that's the opposite end of this. But we also have to use good judgment, even when the plea is strong and the emotions are running high. They might feel like they need that money or they need that contract, but we have to be wise when we enter into business relationships. Number three, the wise use of wealth requires diligence. Proverbs 6, verse 6. Go to the ant, thou sluggard. Consider her ways and be wise. Which having no guide, overseer, or ruler, provideth her meat in the summer and gathereth her food in the harvest. How long wilt thou sleep, O sluggard? When wilt thou arise out of thy sleep? Yet a little sleep, a little slumber, a little folding of the hands to sleep. So shall thy poverty come as one that traveleth, and thy want as an armed man. We've already seen that generally wisdom comes to you before wealth does. And the wisdom that this passage gives us is a very simple idea that's very easy for us to forget, judging especially by how often Proverbs talks about diligence all throughout the book of Proverbs. Wisdom requires diligence. Even in a perfect world, man was given a job to do with things to fulfill. And when taking dominion in a fallen, sinful world is what we have been tasked with by God, we must be diligent to complete our assigned task. And that task is not over even today. I don't have any magic formula or special word studies to give you that describe diligence. For the most part, I think you know what it is. But understanding the concept is not the same as actually doing it. Diligence is a lifelong struggle against laziness and slothfulness. You can't just expect your children to grow up and start out as diligent human beings that will always get their chores done. Sometimes it takes diligence on your part to train them to be diligent with their own tasks. Your children cannot be expected to just know what they're supposed to do or how they're supposed to do it. They must be taught. Diligence must be fought for in yourself and in those that you have been given charge of. Living wisely in God's world is not just some academic responsibility. You don't just get to sit in a high tower and philosophize about what the wisest course of action is. Sometimes the wisest things are the most practical. It's the most involved in our day-to-day life. Even once you have been diligent, even once you have built the wealth, that God has given you or whatever God has given you. You must continue to live wisely, considering the specific things that God has given you to watch over. Proverbs 27, verse 23. Be thou diligent to know the state of thy flocks, and look well to thy herds. For riches are not forever, and doth the crown endure to every generation. The hay appeareth, and the tender grass showeth itself, and herbs of the mountain are gathered. The lambs are for thy clothing, and the goats are the price of the field. And thou shalt have goat's milk enough for thy food, for the food of thy household, and for the maintenance of thy maidens. Be careful to be diligent. Number four, the wise use of wealth requires giving it away. Think about that for a second. Proverbs 11:24. There is that scattereth, and yet increaseth. And there is that withholdeth more than is meet, or more than is proper, but it tendeth to poverty. The liberal soul shall be made fat, and he that watereth shall be watered also himself. He that withholdeth corn, the people shall curse him, but blessing shall be upon the head of him that selleth it. There are some things in regards to money that every financial expert can agree on. Most would agree that investing in the stock market is risky, but is usually better than gathering the few spare pennies that the bank will give you for your savings account. And even those few spare pennies are better than stashing all your money under a mattress where moth and dust and inflation doth corrupt. The Bible would not argue with any of these things either. It wouldn't argue with the financial experts. But while we can usually follow the general monetary wisdom when it comes to these things, the Bible and your financial advisor are likely to disagree strongly when it comes to giving away your money. When you see a poor family struggling to make ends meet through no foolishness of their own doing, or when you see a plea from a faithful missionary like we had recently, praying for money to rent the space next to them, your advisor, your financial advisor might tell you, it's too soon. You haven't built that snowball big enough yet. Your tax professional might tell you that you've already minimized your tax burden, so it doesn't make any more sense to give more away. You might think to yourself, well, I'm living like no one else now, so I can give like no one else later. But if you do not listen to the needs that are out there now, if you do not listen to the Spirit of God prompting your wallet now, you have no reason to think that that will change in the future, even if you do get the wealth that you're shooting for. Money is a tool. And since it's a tool given by God, we can expect that there will be projects that we are given to use it on. We have to be careful to use the tool for the tasks that God brings on our way. We are looking at wealth as a blessing that God bestows on those that are living wisely. But when we recognize where that blessing comes from, that it comes from God, we will recognize that God intends for the blessings that he shares with you to be shared with those around you. Proverbs 19:17, he that hath pity upon the poor lendeth unto the Lord, and that which he hath given will he pay him again. Number five, the wise use of wealth means that we should live below our means. Proverbs chapter 12, verse 9. He that is despised and hath a servant is better than he that honoreth himself and lacketh bread. Chapter 13, verse 7. There is that maketh himself rich, yet hath nothing. There is that maketh himself poor, yet hath great riches. We live in a very prosperous society. America is a trade empire unlike anything that the world has seen before. We've solved most of the day-to-day problems that those that came before us considered to be an eternal part of life. It was the main thing that they strove against day-to-day. Where the main goal of life used to be getting enough food just to live today and trying not to catch a horrible disease that would kill you before you managed that, our modern life has provided plenty of food for not only our nation, but for a good portion of the nations around us. Our healthcare system has made many of the most terrifying diseases of the past to be just weird, old-fashioned concerns that we would actually be shocked to hear that anyone died of. This prosperity has meant that we actually have more money to spend on things that only the wealthy could ever consider just a short while before. The smartphone that seems to be in the pocket of every teenager around us has more computing power than NASA could even dream of when they put people on the moon in the 60s. Technology has advanced at a pace that is almost unimaginable, and all of this wealth and surplus has created a culture. This is important. A culture that encourages us to partake of all, and I do mean all, of the things that that society has to offer. This is all made possible through credit cards and buy now, pay later schemes that promise that you can have the good life now. You can have the furniture, you can have the clothes, you can have the car. And it will only cost you $50 a month. There are many things wrong with this attitude. It teaches us to value the new more than the things that we already have. It trains us to seek our worth in the things that we own. And they have a tendency to turn it around on us as we become slaves to the things that we think we own. Always having to work a little harder and a little longer just to keep up. But wisdom teaches us that wealth is a tool to be wielded for a purpose. There are churches and missionaries to support. There are investments to be made in a world to conquer. And we cannot do that if we are constantly living at the full opulence afforded to us by the riches that God has blessed us with. We are tempting fate and the God who blessed us when we live in a way that says so clearly that the only focus of our lives is ourselves. Proverbs 21:17. He that loveth pleasure shall be a poor man. He that loveth wine and oil shall not be rich. We should live below our means, because otherwise the things that we have a tendency to slip away from us. Number six, a wise use of wealth means providing an inheritance. Proverbs 13:22. A good man leaveth an inheritance to his children's children, and the wealth of the sinner is laid up for the just. A close parallel to what we just described is the issue of leaving an inheritance, and I'll explain why. Just like those that live at or above their income, caring for no one other than themselves, there is a similar attitude that comes from a similar root that looks very different at first glance. Retiring from work and living out the end of your life as a globe-hopping tourist is the goal of many people in our society. There's even a movement of people that are working hard to try to retire in their 40s or sometimes even their 30s if they can gather enough wealth. This looks very different than living above your means and gathering all the things that you can get. Because in order to achieve your goal of retiring early, you have to live well below your means for many years at a time. And this can give the appearance of wise living when it's actually foolishness that is disguised. But when this tactic of living well below your means finally hits its payoff, it results in exactly the same outcome of focusing on yourself. Retiring in your 40s means living your life in a universe that revolves around you. And the concept of leaving something for your children, let alone your grandchildren, like the verse that we just read says, is something that is usually met with laughter in our society. You've probably all seen that bumper sticker that says, "Living large on my children's inheritance," on the back of some large truck pulling a boat, or on the back of a motorhome, or like there's many ways that you can see it. And people treat it like it's a joke, but it usually isn't. This did not used to be the case. It was the goal of many fathers in ages past to leave an inheritance for their children that would be a blessing to them for years to come. This could take many shapes, whether it was in family lands or in a business that was passed down for generations, or even just wise investments that could continue to reap dividends for the father's family for long after he was already dead. This was a major goal for the family for thousands of years before us. It wasn't always attainable, but it was something that was societally blessed and considered to be a good thing to do. We see here in Proverbs that one sign of a wise man, a sign of a good and righteous man, is that he leaves an inheritance for his children's children. And in order to do this, in order for us to live wisely in this way, we will have to make major changes to the way that we plan our lives and our finances. America used to be a place where passing on an inheritance was normal. Fathers trained sons to continue the family business they had been blessed with by their fathers before them, or families that would move into the West, into the frontier. They would carve out a living from the wild land, knowing that once they passed, they would pass on the lands to their children after them. Laborers worked and saved so that they would be able to send their children to college, not just for the pride of station, but also because they knew that passing along this benefit was a way of blessing their families for generations after them. But with our societal prosperity has come a new way of thinking and living. Instead of thinking in terms of families and generations, instead of that being something that was valuable to you, to pass on something to your family after you, we've been trained to live as individual economic units, fully trained and programmed to maximize your personal earnings, as well as trained to consume all of the products that the society provides to you, so as to continue the economic snowball, because the more that you buy, the more that the companies make, the more that they're able to make, it just keeps going. That is the philosophy of the world around us. This is why many of you have received a large deposit into your bank accounts very recently. This was not intended to help the people that were affected in their jobs or circumstances by the government reactions to COVID-19, as there was already unemployment assistance for that, and they've already increased it. The payments are called stimulus payments, and they were bestowed upon you by your benevolent rulers as a loan from your children and your grandchildren, with the purpose that you would go forth into all the earth and buy all things, whatsoever your hearts desired, and lo, the debt is with you always, even unto the ends of the world. But even this is not all. Starting in the month of July, those of you with children will begin to receive multiple hundreds of dollars ahead as a direct deposit into your bank account. This is supposed to only be a temporary situation, but I would not bet against it becoming a permanent situation in the not-too-distant future. Now, I am not an economist or the son of an economist, and I did not even stay at a Holiday Inn Express last night. But I can tell you that this situation cannot continue without drastic effects to the economy. I cannot tell you what they will be. I'm not pretending to be an authority on the matter. And I'm not interested right now in this venue of speaking about the political ramifications. What I can tell you is that this influx of money does provide you with a fantastic opportunity to begin saving for something that will be a blessing to your family for years to come. I would personally, this is not necessarily the Bible, this is just me, I would personally say it's a moral responsibility for you to save it for your children's future. But at the very least, I know that I can say what is required of you as a Christian is to use it wisely. Proverbs 21:20. There is treasure to be desired, and oil in the dwelling of the wise, but a foolish man spendeth it up. Number 7. The wise use of wealth requires righteous dealings with those around us that have none. My main point today has been that financial blessing should be viewed by us as the natural result and blessing of living wisely in the world that God has made. We do need to keep in mind the fact that throughout time, there have been people that everyone would consider to be poor. There are many reasons for this. An obvious one is that sometimes there is just not enough money to go around. Many of you have older relatives or grandparents that either lived through the Depression or they were very soon after the Depression. And you've heard the stories of just the widespread lack that affected almost everyone in the society. It was undoubtedly the result of many foolish decisions by many people, but the general wants and poverty experienced by the majority of people was not due to particular foolishness on their part. It was just what happened to them because of the situation around them. It wasn't done necessarily by their own foolishness. Another reason for poverty is one that we've mentioned, maybe in a sidelong way, but we've mentioned several times already today. If we can say that the general result of living wisely is that financial blessings will follow, we can also say that the reverse is true. Proverbs says this explicitly. If we live in rebellion against the way that God has made the world, which is the same as living foolishly, we can expect nothing else than to receive the natural result of our foolish living. But one final reason for poverty that Proverbs explicitly warns us against is the oppression of the poor by the rich. We need not think too hard about how this can come about. We know that those that are well off have more resources than those that have nothing. And we know that the more money you have, the more opportunity there is for hidden sins that may never see the light of day. Proverbs warns us again and again about the need for righteous judges and rulers to avoid any form of bribery. And it is those that have money to spare, not the poor, that would be even have the possibility of bribing someone over them. It is rulers in high places that have the ability to grease palms and to slip in unjust laws. It is unjust judges that can exonerate the guilty. There is a danger that comes with riches and honor, and we must be careful not to forsake the wisdom that might bring us to those places of blessing. We must remember that even though there are those that are poor of their own doing, there are also people that have experienced genuine hardship. We can say that blessings from God will generally follow when people live wisely in God's world, but we also know that there are people out there that did everything right and then suddenly were blindsided by a medical bill that was catastrophic and they have no way of paying off without living in a much different way than they are used to. There are people that had a prosperous business in another land, and they had to flee from there and leave it all behind because war and rebellion do not stop to ask whether you have been wise or foolish with your money. There are people in our very city that a year ago were successful restaurant owners who today have nothing to show for it through no fault of their own. There are those that own rental houses that we would consider to still be quite wealthy individuals, but they've gone over a year without receiving any income from what they had considered to be their only source of income. These are all things that happen through no fault of their own, and these are the exceptions to the general rules that Proverbs provides us. Ecclesiastes mentions this several times when he says that he saw the great evil, that those that were foolish sometimes still end up with the money, and those that were righteous are still ending up poor. It does happen, and we cannot necessarily make a judgment otherwise. Whether someone is poor because of foolishness on their part or a catastrophic event that they could never see coming and is not their fault, we do know one thing that they all have in common. They have all been created by the same God that created us. And God commands that we treat every person bearing his image with the respect and dignity that comes from bearing God's image. Proverbs 14:31, "He that oppresseth the poor reproacheth his maker, but he that honoreth him hath mercy on the poor." Proverbs 22 and verse 2, The rich and poor meet together. The Lord is the maker of them all. If you find yourself in a situation like what I was just mentioning, you might find yourself in a tough spot listening to this message. You may have regrets or things that you are bitter about. You find yourself badly off, maybe even though you are not aware of any particular sin on your part that caused it. You need to know that you are not only an image bearer of God, you have also found your way to this church with us. This church is an extension of Christ's family, and we are all family together. Let us bear the burden with you. Let us listen to those around us. And please know that your worth is not in the things that you own, or even the things that you might have used to own, but rather that you are valuable because of the God that made you and that made us. Proverbs 15:16. Better is little with the fear of the Lord than great treasure and trouble therewith. Better is a dinner of herbs where love is than a stalled ox and hatred therewith. At the beginning of this message, I asked you to consider three different situations. I asked you to determine which one of those situations you consider to be living wisely and righteously before God. And I kind of gave away my hand by asking you if you even had enough information to decide. We tend to have the most affinity for those that are most like us. If you are well off, you might have leaned towards the wealthy couple with the fancy house. If you have a lot of kids, you might have felt the most like the poorer family with the many children. Or maybe because you're somewhere in the middle, with the blessings and the struggles that come with that, you identify with the middle-class family. We tend to identify the most with those that we are most like. But after this message, I hope you know that given the information I actually gave you, you don't have the ability to determine the question that I asked. You can't determine which example was most righteous and wise. Maybe the rich family has chosen not to have children so that they can live to the top of their capability. Or maybe they have begged God for children for years, for many years, all without you knowing either way. Maybe the reason the husband of the rich family can always be found on his boat is because he is wasting his time and money on a frivolous hobby. Or maybe it's because the prosperity that they have is built off of his successful fishing business that he's wisely run and has reaped the benefits from. Their vacations to other countries could be a waste of money, or they could be for missions trips. Or maybe it's just a well-deserved break. Maybe the poor family has decided to raise as many children as God gives them in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. Or maybe they are taking in as many foster children as they can just to collect all the money that they can gather from the state. The cheap housing may be a purposeful decision to allow them to give as much as they can to missions. Or maybe it shows that they have squandered every opportunity that they've been given to improve their situation. The middle-class family might be making ends meet through wise and judicious decisions, or they may be living over their means just to look like everyone else around them expects them to. I described their situations without giving you the details. I didn't give you enough information to actually make a decision as to whether they were living wisely or not. We cannot, and we should not, decide whether someone is wise or not merely by noting whether they have what we consider to be a proper amount of wealth. But we can know that God has called us to live wisely with what he has given us. We know that he has placed us on this earth to show his wisdom and his power throughout the earth. We know that he's given us a mission and that he will give us the means that we need to accomplish that mission. There are people that have never heard of God. There are orphans that need a family. There are houses that need built up. There are hungry to be fed. There are families that need a legacy, and there are jobs to be created. There is beauty to be shown, and a world to take dominion of, and glories of God to be made known to that world. We have been given enough information to make the decision to seek God and His wisdom. And when we do so, we can know that God has both the means and the desire to bless His children as they follow Him. Happy is the man that findeth wisdom, and the man that getteth understanding. For the merchandise of it is better than the merchandise of silver, and the gain thereof than fine gold. She is more precious than rubies, and all the things thou canst desire are not to be compared unto her. Length of days is in her right hand, and in her left hand riches and honor. Her ways are ways of pleasantness, and all her paths are peace. She is a tree of life to them that lay hold upon her, and happy is everyone that retaineth her. Dear God, we thank you for this time in your word. I pray that your Spirit would apply it in whatever means, in whatever way it needs to be, to the individuals that are here. I pray that we would seek your face, that we would seek not to build wealth, but to seek your wisdom. I pray that you would keep us from judging those that have more or less than we do, that we would seek to be a help to the people around us, and that we would understand that sometimes that means living wisely and building the means to help those around us. I pray that you would burden our hearts, even for the people that live foolishly, even for those that we can come up with an excuse for why they haven't lived the way that you would have them to. Help us to care about those around us. Help us to judge according to your wisdom and not our own. We pray these things in your name. Amen.